Colonel Drummond, Reel 2. Was this train a troop train, or was it just an ordinary civilian one?
No, it was an ordinary civilian one. I don't think there were any troop trains. Troops used to travel third class when they travelled.
And how long did the train journey take?
Well, I suppose we had a night journey from Colombo to Madras, and then we spent the day in Madras pottering about on the beach, I and my brother officer, and then we caught a night train to Bombay. I really don't know how long it took us to get to Bombay, and I think we then must have got to Bombay in the early morning and changed and got a train from there to Lahore. We certainly didn't spend the night in Bombay, as far as I can remember. We were supposed, actually, to get out some unearthly hour in the morning at some small station about 20 miles from Bombay, and then somehow get across by road to another station, which was about 20 miles across onto the other line, thereby saving the Indian government something like about 2 or 3 annas or something, which I refused to do and altered my warrant. However, eventually it was caught up on, and I was asked to pay the difference, which I did, both for myself and the other chap, whose warrant I'd also altered. The Indian government were very mean, I think, in many ways.
In what other ways did it show itself, this meanness?
Well, I was always told we had a... I don't know how true this is, but I was always told in the regiment we had an Indian accountant who used to do all the pay and everything else, and I was always told for every rupee he saved or got out of everybody, he got an earner back, but I don't know how true that was. But they were, I think, well, they were very poor, I think, and they were very mean. As I said to you before, when I went off to do a British officer's Urdu test in Kasauli, is that the right name, up in the Derbyshire Hills, I took a train from where the light railway went up to Kasauli, and then when I put in my claim for this was disallowed, this particular part of the claim, because they said, oh, you should have hired a pony, and there's a 10-mile mountain pass up to Kasauli, and you should have hired a pony, made the pony boy carry your luggage and gone up by pony, which would have cost two and whatever it was, which was much less. So that I think they were a bit mean.
Didn't you say they were mean over ammunition as well?
Well, I think they couldn't afford... When a battalion or an English battalion went out to India, each platoon had 2 Lewis guns. And when they got to India, apparently the Indian government couldn't afford the Lewis guns. And they used to take 1 Lewis gun off each platoon and give it to one of the Indian regiments, and then when you left to go home again, you picked up your Lewis gun and got it back again. I don't know if that was being mean. I think they just probably were poor. I mean, the vote for the army perhaps wasn't very much.
Did the officers grumble about this type of thing? I suppose
I don't think so. Oh, no, I didn't bother about a Lewis gun. I didn't really bother much about it. Well, I think one was just annoyed at having, getting your claim done, but there's nothing much one could do about it. Oh, I forgot about it. I only just mentioned this in passing.
What were your first impressions of India? Can you remember?
You've got to stop it. I think this up. I don't think I had any impressions. I rather took everything for granted. I suppose I'm rather good at adjusting myself. I sort of automatically adjusted. But I think when one came home on leave from India, the first thing one noticed when one came up by train from Plymouth or wherever one landed, or Southampton or whatever it was, how very green the grass in England was compared to the grass in India, and how very fat the cows were. Because I think all their cattle were very thin.
But was it what you expected? It must have been what you expected, I suppose.
Well, I don't know what I did expect. I can't remember that I didn't really expect anything very much.
And you said, where was your first... posting? Where were you stationed, first of all, in India?
We were stationed at Lahore. And we went to Birdwood Barracks, which is in Lahore itself. Everybody, all the regiments stayed out in cantonments, Lahore cantonments, which was about 4 miles outside Lahore. And because Lahore was a place that might go up, we might have some very bad Hindu-Muslim riots. One company was permanently stationed in Lahore, so as to be on the spot as a fire extinguisher to deal with anything. And we were posted to these Birdwood Barracks in Lahore. But the other part about Lahore, apparently, in the old days, it was a place called Mian Mare, I think, which was very bad for malaria. This was a long time before I joined. And apparently they said they can't have any troops in Mian Mare, they must be moved from Mian Mare. And so with great skill they changed the name to Le Hawk Cantonments, and they said Myanmar is no more, the troops are now at Le Hawk Cantonments. Everybody was happy.
Wasn't much of this kind of oral tradition, sort of stories passed down amongst the officers from the past?
Don't think a great deal, no. This was one of the ones that was passed down. I don't think there were a great many.
What was your impression of the cantonment when you got there? Was it the type of... In what ways was it different to the type of stations in Britain?
Well, I suppose the bungalows were different, and I suppose the sort of social form of life was quite different, because one lived rather... Well, one lived rather as a regiment. I can't remember whether they did it in Lahore, but certainly in Jhansi when we went there, all the married people had little boxes outside their house with Mrs. So-and-so not at home. And what you did was that you got on your bicycle in the afternoon instead of going to sleep between about 2 and 4 o'clock and took your cards round and put them in their box. And then the sort of social focus was the Gymkhana Club where everybody went to at night. And then there were no cinemas or anything like that, no theatres to go to. Occasionally you got, occasionally some theatre company, like in Lahore, a company called The Quaints came out to Lahore and did quite a good English play called The Blue Train, was it, I think? And that was a sort of landmark, and everybody went and saw them. But otherwise there wasn't much entertainment like that, and so it was very different at home. You couldn't go off to town and, and go to a theatre or this and that. I mean, you more or less lived in your regiment and in your cantonments.
Did that cause a lot of discontent and problems?
Oh, I don't think so, no. Oh, no, everybody, no, none.
Didn't the soldiers have...
Well, I was talking more about the officers, actually.
Yes, didn't the officers have the desire to go out and see the local towns and country, or...
Oh, one used to go out shooting, one used to go out in expeditions, yes. Well, certainly one did that. But that's not the same as going and seeing a cinema or theatre in the West End. I was dealing with sort of entertainment point of view. Oh, certainly one went out and saw the local country.
And what about the local towns? Did the officers go and go around those and see the sights there?
Oh, I think one definitely did, yes. I can't remember Lahore. I remember Jhansi much better. I think I wasn't very long at Lahore. And certainly when we went and got, just before we left Lahore in 1929, we were sent as a company to be stationed at Amritsar. And one certainly went round. I mean, I've got pictures in my book of the Golden Temple at Amritsar. And we had to get one of the sort of things that really shook us. We had to get a permit in order to take a camera. We had to take our shoes off. I didn't think we were out to have any leather. I had to take my camera out of its leather case. And I had to get a permit from some priest dressed in the most beautiful robes to go and take my camera. And much to my horror and the other chap's horror, he took a very cheap fountain pen out of his pocket to write the thing, which leaked all over his fingers and his beautiful white dress. But no, I certainly went and saw the sights. And then when we were in Amritsar, we went and saw this garden where General Dyer, do you remember General Dyer? Where General Dyer had opened fire on all these people with his machine guns. And after he'd done it, everybody said he'd saved India from a revolution and all the rest of it. And as far as this is my recollection, that he was given a command on the Northwest Frontier, which was one of the best commands. And then they set up this court of inquiry, which pulled him to bits. And I always understood that he lost his temper at the end of it, because he was so badgered by the lawyers and people, that they said to him, why did you stop firing? And he was so fed up. And he said, because I ran out of ammunition. And then they said, if you'd had any more ammunition, would you have gone on firing? And he said, yes, I would. And that apparently sank him. But I must say, there was no escape out of this place. There was only a very narrow passageway at the end. And if you did open fire, it must have been very unpleasant.
Who showed you around the garden?
The local chief of police, a fellow called Harding, who was very keen on Dawnford Yeats's books, if I remember right. We got rather friendly with him, and he showed us round.
Did you ask to be shown round, or did he volunteer to show you round?
I think he volunteered. I think we said we'd like to see bits of Amritsar, and he said, oh, well, come and see this particular place. Because this had happened, I can't remember, when, not very long before. I can't remember it happened when I was in India or before, but it had only happened very recently. I think he thought it was a very good thing. I think he thought it had stopped what might have been a sort of rising.
What other places did you see in the local towns? Were there any places in Jhansi which were interesting?
In Jhansi, yes. There were some Jain temples near Jhansi which were very interesting. Jains is a sort of religious sect who won't kill any animals. And again, I think we had to take all our leather things off and go in our stockinged feet, as far as I remember. And then we went to Orchha, which was the old capital of the Maharajas of Orchha, who apparently I think moved after the Indian Mutiny. And that was a very nice ruin, of forts and palaces and things, and a town which was in ruins and deserted and half jungle. But I think one did quite a lot of sightseeing. And then we were frightfully keen on the Rani of Jhansi, who was our sort of local heroine, who was apparently a great character in the mutiny. And she was eventually, I think, killed or so, but she seems to have been a very attractive sort of personality. And then we used to go over to Dutcher. We were great friends, Diane, about three or four other officers in my regiment, great friends of the Prime Minister of Dutcher, and we used to go over there very often on a Sunday afternoon. And they had quite a good zoo where we used to go for rides on elephants and used to see the tigers and things and drink some rather good George IV whiskey, which we used to get. And one day we went and the Prime Minister said, "Oh, you must come and see. We've got the most magnificent tiger in a cage in the zoo." And we were in rather a hurry for some reason to get home. And we said, "Oh, couldn't we come and see it next week?" And they said, "Oh, no, we won't be there next week because Field Marshal Birdwood is coming to stay with the Maharaja and he's going to go and shoot, and this beautiful animal is going to be driven out in front of him so that he can shoot it, so that it won't be there next week." Tragedy, really, for the tiger. Very cruel, isn't it?
Didn't you say that one of your friends made a particular friend of one of the elephants?
Yes, he did, actually. Elephants are always very pleased to see him for some reason or other.
How did you know that?
Well, I'm not going to go on with that, Mike.
Yes, go on, why not?
No, I don't think so, rather unfair.
And so this place was really a princely state, was it?
A very tiny princely state, yes. We never met the Maharaja, but we did used to see this very nice Prime Minister chap. He's a friend of ours.
Did you make many friends amongst Indians?
No, we didn't, actually, because I think one lived rather as a community, and we did have one or two sort of mandates and people who used to come to guest nights. But generally speaking, one didn't know.
One or two?
Well, people call mandate, which is a sort of minor Indian title, like a Maharaja or whatever it is. But generally speaking, the answer was no. I had rather a friend of an Indian judge, I remember, in Jhansi, in the Jhansi Club, who used to come to it. And I remember discussing this with him, and he said, "Oh, yes, Father, my recollection of this is," I think he said, in conversation, that we like to be members of your club because we feel it's a nice thing to do, but we haven't got very much in common with you, any more than if you were members of our club, you would find it quite different to be a member of our particular clubs because we've got quite different interests. But we do like sort of, feel that we are being made members of your particular club, although we don't particularly want to come to it. So there wasn't, I don't think, a great, well, certainly not amongst the officers of my regiment. I dare say the Indian Army officers may have had more mixing, and no doubt the district commissioners and people mixed more, but for some reason or other we didn't.
Did you ever go to any place where you mixed together with Indians in clubs?
No, not to my knowledge. See, there was what's his name? Nehru was blackballed from a club at Allahabad, which was a terrible thing to have done. He was educated at Oxford, went to all the best English house parties and things before the war, and then he came out to India, and somebody put him up for the Allahabad Club, and they blackballed him, which put his father, Lal Nehru, completely against the British, and a very silly thing to have done. Not only he's recognised in England, he's many friends in England, was at Oxford, as I say, and this just happened. I suppose this was just sort of the Indians, people in India, I suppose, a bit out of touch with things or something.
Coming back to the contact you had with the world outside the cantonment, did you officers organise any trips for the soldiers to go and see places at any time?
I don't think we did, no. Not that I remember, no, I don't think so.
Or trips to factories or anything of that, places of work or anything of that kind?
No, I don't think, no, I don't think we did, no.
Can we talk about the type of training which you did in India? Was it the same type of training which you conducted for the troops in Britain, or did it differ in any way?
Well, I don't know what they did in Britain, because I went straight out to India. I suppose it was the same, yes, one did musketry and drill and PT, and then you'd fire on musketry course, and then you'd do individual section platoon training, and then company training, and then battalion training, and then brigade training, and then inter-brigade manoeuvres. And then that would be the sort of end of the training year. And then you would start off with all musketry and drill parades and those sort of things. But one is very well off for games, because one presumably, instead of doing perhaps drill in the early morning, every company had its own hockey and football ground for each company. And so that you'll probably play hockey or might play football or something, alternatively, or so on the morning parade as a sort of form of PT or something. But does that answer your question?
Well, I was wondering whether you did any training, specialist training, for frontier conditions, for example.
No, we didn't. But when we did go to do a frontier show, which we did from Jhansi in 1931, we did go up to the Murray Hills, and we did do specialist training there for about 2 months, I suppose, or something like that, before we actually went up onto the frontier.
What did that involve, that training that you did in the Murray Hills?
Well, I was a signalling officer, so that I wasn't really so much involved, but what you did really was that if you were going through mountainous country, you put up pickets onto the high hills, because if you were going through a mountain pass, the tribesmen can shoot at you from below, so you shove a picket up onto a hill, say, 1,000, 2,000 feet, goes up, attacks the particular place in case anybody's there, and stays there, and then you put another picket up in front of that, and then the battalion goes through, and then it pulls the back picket down, which comes in, the CO always being at the back of the thing, because he's the rear guard, he's got to pull the pickets down. So he pulls his picket down and brings it up and probably pushes it forward. And so the whole time you're putting people up right and left on these mountains as a picket. And then as you go through, you pull them down so that people don't shoot through from the top.
And your work as the work of a signaller would be to make contact from the main body of troops to the pickets?
Yes, they would probably have flags or semaphores. One wouldn't send any helios or lamps out with them.
Why is that?
Well, because there'd only be a sort of strength of about a platoon or a couple of sections, and you wouldn't have enough people to do it with. So they'd probably have their own flags to signal to their own company. But then you'd pull the picket down by waving a red flag. Each picket had a number, say number 10, and so you'd hold your red flag up and you'd wave it down 10 times, which would be that picket, and they'd acknowledge it. And then you'd give the washout signal with your red flag, and down they would come.
The washout signal being from side to side.
Side to side, yes. And then, presumably from the ground, we would have people covering them coming down so that if anybody got up and tried to shoot at them, you'd be able to shoot back at them. And you had to be jolly fit to do this, because if you want to go up, say, 1,000 feet or 2,000 feet at a good speed and then tack the picket, tack the place, tack it in case there's somebody there.
And did you have any training for crowd control or riot control?
I don't know. I think there must have been. It never fell my lot to do any crowd control. And I know that when we went to Amritsar from Lahore, there were riots in Lahore, and people did have to go out to the aid of the civil power. But I don't know what the drill was. I think we did learn something about that. It was always a very unpleasant experience, because you were always bound to be in the wrong if you went and shot a ringleader or so, because they crossed the line. They said, oh, and you got permission from the district officer or whoever was with you to do this, having read the Riot Act and everything else. They said, oh, the chap had lost his head and you should have realised they had not shot. And if you didn't shoot, and you said the chap told you not to shoot, you realised the chap had lost his head and panicked and you should have shot or so. So that you were always pretty well bound to be in the wrong. So it's the most unpleasant thing to have to do to get the aid of the civil power.
So weren't you involved in those Amritsar troubles?
No,
yourself?
We didn't have any trouble in Amritsar, fortunately. We rarely went there in case there was going to be some, but there wasn't any. Now, the only amusing thing that happened to us was that that should be nameless. The chap who was acting in the company as station staff officer got a telegram down from Northern Command saying, "I'm coming to inspect you," signed, I think, something like Inspectorem. And this chap said to the company commander that General Cobb, who was commanding the Northern Command, is coming down to visit us, on whatever it was. I think we had about a fortnight to do it. So everybody was put on to things. I was put on to doing some company manoeuvre, some sort of training, tool to show him off. Another company was put on to doing drill in his best uniform, and other people did everything else. And everybody rehearsed this for about a fortnight to get perfect. And then the great day arrived, and the chap arrived in the most terrible Ford tin Lizzie with a couple of horses on his thing, and he arrived, and we said, we've got General Cobb coming to inspect us. What do you want? What do you want? He said, "I don't think General Cobb's coming to inspect you. He's gone off to so-and-so." And we said, "Oh, but we've got this telegram." Everybody said, "Didn't you look up Inspectorem in the code book?" And we said, "I don't think we did." "No." He said, "Well, you'll find it's the Inspector of Mules. I've come to inspect your mules." Then we told him, we said, "We're very sorry, but we'd left all our mules behind in Lahore. There was nothing to inspect." So that was really rather funny, actually. But that's about... there were no riots in Amritsar at that particular time, fortunately.
How much were you told about the type of trouble which was brewing in Amritsar?
Well, I don't think there was any. It was merely a precautionary measure in case something happened. Amritsar is a Sikh place. It's the home of the Sikhs. Now, I think they thought that there might be some trouble there of sorts, and so we were pushed into it. And I suppose the fact that a company had arrived, it probably wasn't going to be any trouble anyhow. Just a precautionary method.
Did you ever have any joint training exercises with the RAF whilst you were in India?
No, but they used to come into our schemes and things on big training. Big training exercises, like divisional exercise.
In what way did they come in?
Well, they used to come in and fly and sort of attack people and that sort of thing, and one had to take cover. Anyone who goes through the drill taking cover and getting away from them. We had General Ironsides, who I think was something rather at the beginning of this war, was the divisional commander. He was an enormous big man, and I remember one aeroplane came very low, and I think everybody shot at it, and General Ironsides waved his hand at it, and apparently the chap flying the aeroplane saw this and went off and landed on his base and said, "Oh, I've been put out of action. I saw General Ironsides wave the washout at me with his hand, so he said, I've come back." But otherwise we didn't have any specialist training.
But how did you signal to the planes, apart from the waving your hands?
Well,
to
we
them?
Could
did,
put
did
out.
Any...
Well, this was—I mean, that was a joke, really.
Yeah.
We would put out strips in front of you, and then there was a panel which you had, which was a sort of thing rather like an aeroplane that you put up, that you could pull various strips backwards and forwards and make various signs, and they could read that. And I think that was about the only way you could do it in those days. Because the aeroplanes were very obsolete. I mean, with Bristol fighters and Wapitis they had, which the Bristol fighter was the, sort of one of the fighter planes of the First World War, and they still had those in India. And then they had a thing called a Wapiti, which was a fairly up-to-date plane in those days. And those were about the only planes they had. And then,
Did the planes communicate with you by dropping messages in any way?
Yes, did do that, yes. They would drop messages, yes. And they may well have been in contact with some other form of communication with, say, brigade headquarters or something like that, but certainly not with battalion headquarters. Yes, they would drop a message down with a little sort of ribbon on it which would come down with a message, yes.
Not on a parachute?
No. But I suppose it was a weighted thing with a bit of lead and a streamer, and down it would come and you would find a message, yes.
How much cooperation was there with the Indian Army?
With
the Indian regiments? Were you in close contact with them whilst you were in India?
Well, they were always in the station, yes. I mean, Jhansi, who had a brigade which consisted of one British battalion and an Indian cavalry regiment and three Indian battalions. What did we have? We had the 2nd, 9th Jats, the 4th, 5th Rattray Sikhs, and the 3rd, 8th Punjabis. And one obviously used to go and dine in their mess and knew their officers very well. There wasn't very much contact between the troops, our soldiers, and their soldiers. And they lived more or less down in Jhansi itself rather than in cantonments. And the man used to meet the officers in the club, and I had one or two very great friends in the 3rd, 8th Punjabis, and indeed used to play squash with one or two chaps in the Sikhs.
Did you find that those officers in those Indian regiments had a different attitude to the people in the country in any way to the officers in the British regiments?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
So your regiment would be engaged on the usual training exercises with these Indian regiments?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed, yes.
And did you have sporting fixtures against each other?
I don't think we did, no. I mean, obviously we did if we had brigade or divisional sports and that sort of thing. But not unless it was organised on that sort of basis.
Did you find that there was any sense of rivalry between the Indian regiments and the British regiments, of wanting to outdo each other in any kind of way?
No, I don't think so. I mean, not as far as we were concerned, anyhow.
Relations were very good then between...
Relations are very cordial, yes. And they were very, very efficient, the Indian regiments. And they had jolly good officers, too.
You were telling me earlier about the campaign you were on the frontier. Can you tell me a little bit more about it, what the name of the campaign was and what its object was and what you did and so on?
Well, I think what happened was that the Afridis, who live about, I suppose, in the Oruksai Hills, about 16 miles sort of northwest of Peshawar, started coming down cattle raiding and really becoming rather a nuisance. And so I think the idea was that something would have to be done to stop this. So they sent, I think there were 3 brigades eventually operating in this. So they decided to send troops up. I think the main object of the campaign was to sort of try and open the country out, to show these chaps a show of force, which would impress them, and at the same time to open the country up by trying to build roads, so that instead of coming down and raiding stuff and